Welcome to Education Talks. I'm David Burke. Beth Kerr is a consultant and coach focused on well-being and digital education. She was previously the group director of well-being at Cognita Schools and continues to serve as a school inspector. Beth is now empowering people to have agency over their well-being and digital habits. Well, Beth, welcome to Education Talks. Where are you joining us from?
Hey, it's lovely to be here. I am joining you from, I would love to say sunny London, but it's kind of cloudy London.
Well, it's a little bit similar here in Bangkok, where it's been raining all day. And at the time of recording, of course, the EACOS conference on, and a few people have said, hey, where's the nice tropical weather that's supposed to be here as they've arrived? But thanks so much for being here. It's a pleasure to have you on the program. I'm hoping you can start off by telling us a little bit about your background and pathway into education, and what was it that inspired you to pursue a path into education?
Well, just to answer your last part of the question first, Mrs. Madeline Price was my PE teacher at school, and she definitely was the person who inspired me to pursue a career into education. So I was always, I loved sport, and so went to study sport at Loughborough University, and had a really enjoyable career as a PE teacher, and then moved into senior leadership as a pastoral deputy. I was always more interested in understanding how, you know, children's thoughts and feelings, you know, impacted how they learned. And then in 2015, I was, you know, coming across more and more students who were struggling. And I went to my head teacher at the time and I said, I really need to train in more depth here, because I'm just going with gut instinct, as so many teachers do. And whereas I think it wasn't a bad approach, it was not doing enough for the students and their families, to be honest, that I was serving. So I did a master's in child and adolescent mental health then at UCL, and that was unbelievably helpful. It was like a light bulb moment. You could understand these children in a different way, you know, and in a bit like when a toddler starts talking, you think, ah, right, okay. And I was particularly interested in the impact of technology, which at the time was really taking a hold. It was whenever, you know, give everybody an iPad, it was all that sort of that sort of period of time, and looking a lot at the adolescent brain development and the science around that was also, it was fairly nascent then. Now it's much further developed, and so I sort of specialized a bit in looking at well-being and digital wellness and education, and worked then, started doing some work and some writing, and then worked for Cognita as their global or group director of education at well-being. Sorry, Dr. Simon Canby will be, I'm not trying to steal his job. So yeah, I was the group director of well-being and working across, you know, there were three regions at the time, now there are five, and, you know, really trying to embed a structure of well-being across all these countries was amazing. It was an amazing opportunity, and I really enjoyed it. And it was, I hope, a really helpful way of helping the schools put some meat on the bones of what can be a little bit of a nebulous concept. Everybody thinks well-being is important, of course, and you won't find a school that hasn't got it emblazoned all over their website, but actually, what does it mean? So going there and helping schools translate that into meaningful actions for their students. And I suppose also being a parent of three children, a 15-year-old and twin 11-year-olds, gives you a different perspective, you know, also from understanding from the parents' point of view, but also you can see from a, you know, from a teacher's point of view, you know, the way that they learn and so on. So, yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
So you've had a varied career, and as you say, going from wellness education now to your focus on digital education. Can you sort of share what motivated you to explore this area in particular, and how, like, wellness and digital education interconnect in your professional life?
Yeah, I actually remember it very clearly, because I was doing this master's and we're doing a module on neuroscience. And at the time, my twins were about two and maybe three. And it was, you know, everybody had iPads. If you didn't have, you know, didn't give them an iPad in the car. So they sort of didn't have their own, obviously, but they did use it. And then I lost the charger for this iPad, which, if you knew me, wouldn't surprise you at all. I lost the charger. And after about 3 days, I said to my husband, can you actually? It's so much easier because the response you would get when you switch the iPad off was different to the response you would get if you said, right, come in from playing, on the swings or your jigsaw or whatever else. It was much more extreme. And then, the sort of, they couldn't emotionally regulate the disappointment of taking that device away. And I suppose that with the things, the work that we're learning about the brain and how persuasive design processes target children's brain development to make these games more appealing was really a light bulb moment. And at the same time this was happening, I started off by doing lots of talks to parents in secondary school, year 8, year 7. And then I was getting calls, could you come in and talk to year 6, year 5, year 4? And I thought, gosh, and it was a real moment where I thought, wait a minute, we need to wake up here, because the people who are designing these games and social media and all this thing around, they are scientists. They are brain scientists. That's what they're working on. So we have to, kind of educate ourselves as best we can, because that gives you the resolve to keep going or to put boundaries in place that are difficult. And so that was really important. And then when I was at Cognita, we were looking at well-being and identifying which things contributed to it, because that's the key. It's all very well knowing what it is, but if you don't know how to improve it, it's not much good. So we're looking at the things that contributed to sleep and exercise and relationships and so on, and then looking at how does tech influence those things. And so trying to put it, rather than seeing it as something separate, because I think that's really ineffective, particularly if you're working with adolescents. That's a surefire way of, kind of alienating them. So looking at, this is the world, this is how the world is, this is how technology is, this is how integrated it is, but what can we do to ensure that we also protect the things that really improve our well-being? And so looking at those things were really helpful in and I've just continued on that path really, to where I am now.
Just wonder, has your view on digital devices with students, has that sort of changed in any way in recent times?
Yes, it's sort of done this, so I went from being okay, maybe we should allow them to being complete, gaming is the devil. I was just the complete opposite end, to actually being maybe coming a little bit more to the viewpoint that tech is neither good nor bad. Tech is just tech. It's like food, it's neither good nor bad. It's just how you use it and when you use it, and what for. What are you using it for? So I think in the early days there was a real need from parents especially to know how long, Mrs. Kerr, how long can they have on their devices? It was just they wanted a number, because a number is easy, right? You can say, well, you have to have 8 hours sleep or 9 hours sleep. But of course, the more sophisticated technology was getting and the more it infiltrated every aspect of our life, it was becoming more and more difficult to do that, because you would have, yes, you're speaking to grandparents on the phone, or you're looking at Google Maps, or you're researching, or you're using GarageBand to make a song or whatever. Those are very different. You are using it to help you. That's not the same as passively scrolling through, social media, which is more consumer, you're just consuming blindly, sort of consuming something. So that there's a difference in how long you're doing it, yes, but it's more what you're doing. It's so nuanced. So it was trying to, and now actually, and if we look at gaming, particularly in the pandemic, it served a really important purpose and function to connect friends, and they were able to play in a way that they weren't in the real world. And so it's about having balance, but in a way that makes it harder, because sometimes abstinence is more straightforward. I'm not saying it's easier, but it's more straightforward. But it's just not possible in this world. So I feel certainly more towards the middle, that tech is amazing, but it certainly has the power to do damage. I would look at it like a car. You wouldn't dream of giving your student, your 17-year-old, a car and saying, off you go. But having a car, the ability to drive, it's incredible. It gives you incredible freedom, it gives you flexibility. but it can also create havoc, and cause all sorts of, and tragedy in some cases. So it's just about being constantly aware. And in the same way, when you're driving a car, you have to be constantly aware. You can't just learn the lesson and then not revisit it. And next time you go in the car, you just switch off. And it's like that with tech. You have to be aware that it's a super, super powerful machine. And you have to have that in your mind all the time, rather than just thinking, oh, I've told my child not to do X, Y, and Z, and expect that they would be able to do it, because we as adults can't do it. If I'm being honest, it's hard. So you have to constantly do that. But it's certainly, and part of that has come from speaking to young people, because I'm on their team. I want to help them. They want help. But if they feel there's a big gap between how they perceive technology and I perceive technology, then we're not going to get anywhere. So, speaking to them a lot and listening to them, that has really helped me come more to this sort of middle way and see how it's not helpful to talk about them and us and, digital world and not, all that sort of thing is unhelpful.
In your opinion, what are the key well-being challenges facing students today, and what can schools and families do to better support students?
Well, look, of course, there's the bigger picture things, the sort of world events and economic stability and changes to the labor market and all those sorts of things. Of course, they are in all our minds. But I think when we think about young people, they're all individuals, and their experiences will differ hugely all around the world, depending on where they are. And therefore, maybe a better way to think about it is thinking, how can we help students deal with these challenges? That might be a good place to start. So kind of accepting that there are huge and numerous challenges all over the world, but that there may be small events in a child's life that have a huge, much bigger impact than a war in a country for them. And therefore, how do you help a child deal with what is challenging for them is where I'm going to kind of start with it. And I go back to, I talked a bit about when I was looking incognito about the things that impact well-being, we identified some key things, and I'm just going to pick out two of them. I would say relationships, and I'm going to look at sleep. So if we look at sleep, first of all, right, the research is, beyond conclusive about the impact it has on the way we function, the way we kind of regulate our emotions, the way we can learn, the way we can focus, and the way we can remember. There isn't a single mental health condition where disturbed sleep isn't a feature. There is so much there now that I'm amazed it's not more ingrained in education, in parent sort of our sort of battles with students. So I think a child, an adult who is well rested, will be in a better place to cope with the challenges and make better decisions around challenges in their world. So I think that is critical. And there's lots of different ways that we can do it. That's some of the things that I'm looking on. But I think sleep is it would be the number one area that I would target to help them deal with it. The second one is this bit about relationships. Relationships are, they always will be a sort of fundamental part of identity formation. And in adolescence particularly, we know that that is the number one, that is this is kind of innate driver of this, the most important thing for, how they behave. And so if you understand that, that will help young people, kind of navigate it. So when we talk about relationships, they need to have one person at least that they can always go to, that they have as their safe person. Now, it's a parent, it can be a teacher, it can be more than one person, but that's their sort of anchor. And their relationships with their friends is really important. So helping them make good decisions about the people they spend time with, helping them to make decisions based on their judgment and how they feel, rather than what social media is telling them they should feel, is important. So I think never underestimating the importance of relationships will help them, because children who sort of and adults, we know that the biggest predictor of life success and happiness is the quality of relationships. They did the Harvard study, I'm sure is well known by your listeners. But it's it's refreshing and important to kind of reinforce and looking at that through the lens of the adolescent brain. And I think sometimes in schools, in homes, we forget that the way they're processing is different to the way that we process it. So I think I would look at those two things, and then finally, of course, how does technology impact sleep and relationships? If you sort of sit, if you kind of accept that those two things will have an impact on how children can deal with challenges, then it makes sense to then look at how does technology impact sleep? Yes, very obviously, if the phone is in the bedroom, that's a disaster. But there are other things, even just before bed. Are those is that sort of stimulation just before they fall asleep helpful? Are there good ways? Does it sometimes get little reminders to help you to dim the light? There are positive ways that it can encourage you as well. But relationships and technology is a big one. I think all teachers I've ever met who now work in the pastoral space will tell you that the biggest area of conflict of is all online. There are very there are fewer cases of face-to-face, breakdown of relationships. A lot of it is done online, and a lot of it is because of misunderstandings and the ability of WhatsApp, for example, to magnify and catastrophize a situation beyond the child's ability to cope with it. You've gone from having an argument with your friend or saying something silly, it's been taken a different way, and then it's kind of gone viral, as they say. So I think looking at how tech influences relationships with each other, with the parents, their caregivers, and with themselves. So I think those are three elements of those relationships. The relationship with you as a parent, you can improve that by when your child is when you're when they come in, you and you ask them how their day is, or whenever you are talking to them and you're listening to them and you're not also checking your emails. You'd be better off saying, look, darling, I've got to just finish this work in an hour, and then we'll sit down and a proper chat, and you're with them in the room properly, because that really will help your relationship, and expect the same from them when they're when you're talking to them. Meal times, those opportunities of proper in-person interaction will help your relationship with them. Trying to help them form their identity based on the things they like doing, the way that not comparing them with airbrushed sort of all these sort of things that can help or can make a child feel a bit rubbish about themselves. Having those conversations regularly, I think that's pretty important. But then also using it to follow their passions. So use social media. If they're really interested in being a journalist, follow some cool journalists, get inspired by them. So you're not sort of saying, don't use it for this. You're just by default, by pushing them towards really interesting people, that you're developing their passions, and then there is less time to just follow TikTok and so on. And then yes, the relationships with their friends, little things like take a pause. If there's one thing I would say to children when they talk about it, their relationships online, just take a pause before you write something down. Take a pause before you respond on to a post. Just take a second, because they're more impulsive generally. They can be more impulsive in the presence of friends. That's what the evidence tells us. So you telling helping them just take a pause means that they may make a better decision, and their relationships would be better.
Cool. Now, Beth, can you share with us some of the projects you've worked on recently, and what has been the most satisfying?
I'll take the one of the what I really enjoyed doing when I was working with a group of schools was really helping to drill down what well-being was, and so that every child knew what contributed to it, and then you're on your way to trying to improve it, rather than having conversations, which I did certainly as a teacher. They'd come and they don't feel that great, and it's like pulling teeth trying to find out why. Whereas straight away they would say, well, okay, yeah, well, actually, I haven't. They knew these six things that we talked about, and they would say, well, yeah, maybe I haven't actually been doing anything for myself, doing something fulfilling, for example, or I've been eating loads of rubbish lately. And so identifying the sort of five or six things, we looked at sleep, diet, exercise, connecting, doing, and giving. There are others, you as a school, wherever you are, you pick four or five, but they're clear, and then you keep reinforcing those messages. So I think that was really a really great start, because it enabled schools to be able to have a strategy around well-being, because then they could see, how do we contribute to these six things? How do we detract from them? If you're saying all the time that PE and sport is really important, but then the lessons keep getting cancelled because there is exams in the gym, that's a really conflicting message for the children. And so, that was really important. And doing a survey to ask students about that was key. The other part was, I've always been a huge advocate, and I still am, of listening to young people and speaking to them. So doing a sort of global survey about the impact of these things, which were impacting their well-being the most. And then on the back of that, doing I interviewed students from, again, all over the world, asking them about technology and the impact on their learning and well-being and so on, and wrote a really interesting report. It was there. It was interesting because they were contributing to it, and about what they actually wanted, how they wanted the adults in their life to help them, and they were rather scathing about tech assemblies, digital safety, online safety, stranger danger. They weren't a big fan of that, but they were very open that they were struggling with habits around productivity and being able to focus and concentrate for 5 minutes without flicking, and they were very open about that, and very open that they wanted help in that. So I loved doing those projects, and they kind of have linked on to the sort of work that I'm doing now.
You mentioned a global survey, global student survey. Was it always the case that you could sort of see very consistent results from across so many different schools and countries, or was it more sort of, different pockets, or what was that like?
Well, it's really funny you asked that, because I've done two global surveys. One was in 2019-20, and it was asking about tech. It was asking about what are the biggest challenges to your students' well-being, to parents. And they had a choice of all sorts of things. And globally, the top two were social media and screen time. Every country, every parent, no matter what age group, and then these are, Asia, Latin America, Europe, Middle East, across the world. And then the one we did recently was about asking about, again, which of those six contributors, do you feel, is being more challenged? And sleep came again, almost, they were, I think from memory, it was about 55, only 55 to 60% of children felt well rested and ready. And that certainly mirrors, since I've left Cognita, that certainly mirrors evidence when I've been working with individual schools and schools groups about the impact of sleep. So it's great that it's being identified, but we're obviously not there in terms of the sort of the progress that we need to make to enable that to be better.
So, looking towards the future, what new projects or initiatives are you most excited about? And and how do you plan to continue in these fields of wellness and digital education?
It's really exciting. So I think schools generally are have made huge strides in how they are working with well-being now. I feel like it's a real integrated part, and it really is. I think sleep, as I said, is the bit that we still haven't got right. So I'm doing some good projects with schools. And it's a kind of mixture of education, tracking, getting students to do that cause and effect. I'm tired. I've argued with my boyfriend. I've failed my maths exam. My skin's rubbish. Those sorts of integrated and ongoing messages. And then the other sort of, there's two other areas, but the one is about how empowering. I'm empowering people to kind of be the pilots, not the passengers, of their digital use is kind of the underlying theme. And I'm doing one research project with aspiring young athletes, looking at how tech detracts or enhances them moving towards their goal. And I don't know if you, there was a, it's a footballer in England called Jamie Redknapp, and ex-footballer, is a pundit now. And he said recently something like, the biggest killer of football players between the age of 14 and 20 is their mobile phones, because anytime they're not on their phone, they're just on this, they're not playing football, they're on this thing. And it just, he was very damning about it. So I'm doing some work with different clubs and young athletes. I'd love to hear from anyone, to any students in that position. So that's a really exciting one. And then the other one is about that sort of work in schools, because I think when we think to the future, the skills our young people are going to need in the future, the most valuable skill, or one of the most valuable skills in the economy, is becoming increasingly rare. You know, this ability to focus and work without distraction. And so I'm working with schools and organizations looking at that. And it can be difficult to push, particularly with, you know, I think head teachers and certainly business leaders that I've worked with find it difficult to bring it up with their staff, because it sounds as if they're being making judgments about, you know, how long you're spending on WhatsApp, what, you know, rather than doing your work. And it's not about that. It's about acknowledging it's not them against us. It's acknowledging that technology is hugely powerful based on our neuroscience and our chemistry. And so we are not, if we just sit there passively, it will be like a big wave that will engulf us, and we'll go with it. So being really intentional to reclaim our, you know, kind of attention. So not moving, safety online is an important part, but the focus of my work is more around how to get those students to achieve their potential, that extra bit of focus, that extra bit of attention. Those students who can do that, those students who will be able to do that deep work, is a guy called Cal Newport who talks a lot about this. The students who could do that will be the ones who excel in the future. And so that, knowing how malleable their brains are in school, it makes sense to make an, you know, make a start with that work now. So that you should then see better grades, better performances in their extracurricular, and better relationships, because they can also sustain attention when they're talking to their friends rather than, you know, wanting to, or their hobbies or whatever else they're doing. So that's a quite a big bit. And I have been doing some work with safeguarding and well-being in schools, because I feel often there's such a focus on safeguarding that well-being and naturally, you know, the accountability is huge. So trying to sort of balance where they fit in together. So those are the sort of three big areas.
Now, if people want to reach out, how can they go about doing that?
Yeah, well, I always love hearing from anybody on email, bethkerrwellbeing@outlook.com, or they can find me on LinkedIn, or my website, bethkerrwellbeing.com. So fairly straightforward.
Excellent. And we'll include that in the description. Beth, thanks so much for your time. It's been a great chat here on Education Talks.
Lovely. Thanks for having me.
The EdEvents community is your one-stop shop for all things happening in international education. We're partnering with events organisers, solutions providers and schools so that you can discover professional opportunities by joining for free. You can also connect with colleagues in various community groups. So sign up today by visiting the EdEvents website, ed.events.